Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Welcome. We've had the red carpet out because we've got not the Director General, but Director of the Isle of Wight branch of Samaritans. Mark is in. Good afternoon, Mark. Welcome to Vectis Radio. It's really nice to meet you. We're going to find out a lot more about Samaritans and volunteering in the next few moments. But tell us what your role is.
Okay, well, thank you for having me, and thank you for listening, whoever's listening. My role is to provide an oversight of the branch. So we've got about 65, 70 people that volunteer at the branch. So my role is to ensure their well-being primarily, as well as secondarily managing, you know, the detail, if you like. So I'm just here to encourage people to come and join us.
That's a big group of people, yeah. And I think that's amazing because you know, I would imagine there's a lot of busy people out there that don't have time and so on, but they've managed to make time and be a part of the Samaritans, which I think is fantastic, and I think what you do is incredible for so many years. How long have the Samaritans been going?
70 years this year.
70 years, which are you making a big thing of 70 years this year?
It is being, you know, it's being used for publicity. It's tied in with the coronation. And apparently I discovered yesterday we won a prize for our stand at the Chelsea Flower Show. I don't know the detail. That's above my pay grade.
Right, okay. It's fantastic. So let's talk about being a volunteer. How long have you been a volunteer and what made you volunteer?
I've been a volunteer since about 2009, and I know it sounds trite, but I'd had a life where I felt that I could put something back, but that's not my prime motivation now. Then it was. Now my prime motivation is to ensure that people that call us, often who are in great distress, are able to talk freely. You know, we do not make judgments. We do not advise. We listen. We're called listening volunteers.
And obviously, I mean, you've got a great voice. If I was troubled and I was listening to you on the other end of the phone, it's very calming, a very calming voice. And can we say what you said earlier on, where you had a conversation and it ended up going down the road of, and you must have calmed whoever it was on the other end of the line. Obviously, we can't name names or anything like that, but can you tell us what happened?
Well, this guy phoned on our national number, 116123, if you need to know, and someone will pick the phone up to you. And he was in all sorts of trouble, all sorts of stuff going on in his life. And the call lasted quite a long time. Our average call is probably 20, 25 minutes, but sometimes they go on for an hour or two. And this had been quite a long call. And in the end, he was offering me recipe tips, which I found absolutely astonishing. I did take one of them up. It wasn't bad, actually.
But how does that make you feel when you know that, you know, the phone call will start and it might be a tricky one? Because let's be honest, you don't know, you know, who's phoning up and you don't know how this is going to go. But how does it make you feel when you it's almost like the conversation turns a corner and you how do you feel?
Well, it's interesting because the way we're trained tells us that what we're trying to do is get the person to recognise their own solution to whatever the problem is. We're not qualified to give them a solution. So the conversation, there is always a turn in the conversation, and it's really difficult to quantify because each conversation is individual. You know, I've taken calls from people that are literally standing on the Itchen Bridge, and they're using our free phone on the Itchen Bridge, and their full intention is to jump off of it. Or someone who's just had a row with their partner and they're really upset. So we get the whole raft of human emotion, if you like. Invariably, the calls finish up on a positive note.
How does that make you feel when it started off, you know, quite difficult, and it's ended up you've calmed somebody down, and they may have agreed to get help, or they're offering you advice on cooking.
Well, of course, it's a good feeling. And, you know, let's not beat around the bush. People come and volunteer as a Samaritan, and they come and volunteer for a variety of reasons. But I want to stress that it's a pleasurable experience, overarchingly. As a branch, we encourage socialising amongst us. So in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to have Sunday lunch together, for example. So, but every Samaritan you speak to will have a slightly different experience as to how it works, how a conversation turns, how they feel at the end of the conversation. Some conversations I come away from them thinking, oh, gosh, I could have done better. Other conversations I think, well, you nailed it. And the person has gone on their way feeling better than they were when the conversation started.
What do you need to become a Samaritan? What's the general, the main thing that you need? If there are people out there, because the whole point of this conversation today is we want to encourage other people to be and come forward and help out and be Samaritans. What do we need?
Two ears.
Right, okay.
I have this little phrase that I always use to people who are coming into training, is that we've got two ears and one mouth, and as a Samaritan, you use them in that proportion. Obviously, you have to have a degree of empathy, and you have to be quite careful because you will hear things that you don't want to hear, or things that challenge your thinking, either socially or societal norms, whatever. So you have to be careful that you don't react to that, because that may be your belief, but the caller's belief is diametrically opposed. So that's the difficult bit. But in essence, I want someone to listen to what someone's saying, pick up on what they're saying, and feed it back, if you like, in a different manner.
I'm a great believer at the moment is that there's a lot of people that talk and do a lot of talking, but they don't listen. They don't stay quiet long enough to find out how people are feeling. I want to take you back to when, before you became a Samaritan, what made you decide? Was there somebody that said something to you, or was it something you wanted to do? What made you sign up?
I had experienced a suicide. Someone took their own life, someone who I knew quite well, and inevitably, when you experience things like that, it changes your thinking. And I couldn't understand why they did it. And I couldn't understand how someone could be so desperate as to do that. And that kind of started the journey. So Samaritans became the natural end product, if you like, of me discovering and understanding that kind of thing.
So what step? What was the first step when you thought to yourself, right, I'm going to do? Was it a friend that was part of the Samaritans already, or was it something you thought, that's what I want to do? How do I do it?
It was, that's what I want to do.
And you just decided to pick up the phone, and then talk us through what happened.
Right. Well, it was different in those days to how it is now. How the whole recruitment process works. In those days, each branch had its own dedicated phone number that the callers phoned in on. Now we have a national phone number, so it doesn't matter where they're phoning from. They could finish up speaking to us on the Isle of Wight or someone in, you know, wherever, Northern Ireland or something. So basically, I made a phone call. I was interviewed, and then I went through a training process. And then I was mentored after the training process. So I was accompanied by an experienced Samaritan who kind of held my hand through the first, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks, until I was confident. And there's nothing set in stone in terms of the training. So there's a 6-week specific, 3 hours a week training. And then people get released, if you like, into the big bad world of the ops room, but accompanied by someone who we call a mentor. And that mentor is there to help them understand what they've learned in training, because obviously we have to abide by certain policies and so forth. But the mentor's role is to turn that into practical. So when the phone rings, what do you do? How do you react to what you're hearing? And then to support the new Samaritan through the process of understanding what they've heard and how they've reacted.
I mean, it sounds kind of a scary process, but it's not. And you're obviously going to encourage other people to do. What advice can you give them? You know, that somebody is now thinking about joining. What would you say to them? What have they got to look out for? And what advice?
I'm always loath to give advice because we're all individuals, but I would say principally be yourself. You're hearing me now, and you're seeing stuff on you know other media outlets about Samaritans, specifically Samaritans on the Isle of Wight, because that's what I'm really interested in. So be yourself. You've made a decision. It's not scary, although it may appear to be. Ultimately, it's not scary. We're all just perfectly ordinary people. We're not professional counsellors or therapists or anything like that. We're just us. And each one of us brings something different to the table when we answer a call.
Ordinary people of different ages as well.
Yeah, the age range in our branch is from, I don't know, mid-20s up to, well, old fogies like me, I suppose.
Well, I never said you're an old fogey. I find it fascinating, you know, you say 20s, but you think, okay, you can be 20, and you've had a life, and you've probably got some experience, and you've probably got some help to give, and certainly some empathy. So what would you say to people that were on the brink of thinking about doing it? Why would I, and so on? What would you say to them now?
Well, I would say do it, because what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing that happened is that you come in and do the training and then you decide it's not for you. So you've drunk out to eat and had biscuits and learnt something. And if it is for you, wonderful. Please come in and join us all, because we have a disparate group of people. You know, we have people that are retired head teachers of large, well-known public schools, people who've been midwives and nurses, or people like me. I was a computer programmer. So it's every form of human life is there in terms of experience and understanding and life lessons learned.
And the problem we all have is that the numbers that you're helping is increasing. So that need, there is a need for more people to help those people.
Currently, our average number of calls per year nationally is about 6 million. And yes, we are under pressure because we are currently not able to answer every call that comes in, simply because of lack of numbers. There are circa 13,000 Samaritans nationally that are active listeners. So if I can gain 10 people to the Isle of Wight branch, that means I can open 3 or 4 more shifts a week, and therefore we can answer the calls.
Wow, that would make an incredible difference, wouldn't it? So just that, you know, a few amount of people make such a massive difference. So, you know, message is simple. If you are listening to this now, or if you're listening to the podcast later on, and you're thinking about doing it, just pick up that phone and dial that number, which is...
Right. Well, can we do it? There's two ways of applying now. One is through the Samaritans homepage, the Samaritans website. So if you go onto that, there's a link at the bottom for you to run through a process of recruitment, and then it's sent down to us as a branch, and I have someone who looks after that. The other option is to email... probably me is easiest, which is director@iow-samaritans.org, and I will contact you and start the process.
Brilliant. And you must have people that have stories, messages, and so on that have gotten on board and how they feel. Can we mention that?
Well, this is a bit of history. We have a phenomena where people phone us and then hang up because they kind of lose their courage, if you like, to actually vocalise whatever it is that's bothering them. And there was a woman who, 20 years ago, made, we call them snap calls, made several thousand snap calls to Samaritans and eventually spoke to someone. And from that, she finished up as the CEO of Samaritans. So, yes, that does happen.
Wow.
Callers call us, and callers sometimes finish up as volunteers.
That's incredible. What about the people that are volunteers? They must have some stories of how it makes them feel. And as I say, you said earlier on, they're all different, and they're all going to feel different, and they're going to have different experiences, but you must have a few you can tell us about.
I think overarchingly, when I talk to people that are newish, they're surprised at how good it makes them feel. I'm no longer surprised at how good it makes me feel. Very often I finish a shift, I'm driving home, and I'm thinking, actually, do you know, that was quite an incredible conversation that I just had. And belief that that person has managed their situation, whatever it is. So I suspect that that would be the kind of standard, if you like, response. But obviously they're all different, so it hits people in different ways, and it depends on the listener's background, you know, their understanding of, you know, someone can phone up and talk about something which is close to an experience you've had. And obviously, for each one of us, that's different.
What about people that are thinking about joining, and the one thing that puts them off is, I don't know how I can deal with someone else's really horrendous life, and am I going to get sucked in and feel sad and it affect me? Is there help for those people that would have to go through or will go through those certain kind of calls?
How we're structured is that at no time are you on your own in the what we call the ops room. So that's the sharp end. That's where the phones are. There's always two people on duty. And there is a third person who's not physically there, but we call them a leader. And the idea is that you phone the leader at the end of the shift and you basically dump whatever you've heard in the leader's lap, so that you, my little thing is, you arrive as you leave as you, in other words, undamaged, if that's the right way of putting it. So there's a whole raft of support around all volunteers. So within our branch, as I say, 65, 70 volunteers, but from myself downward, there's a whole group of people who've got various specific roles, including someone that we call a deputy director of volunteer care. Their role is to stay in contact with the volunteers to make sure they're okay.
So have you ever experienced where it's something that's really like proper heavy, and you've got assistance, you've got help, or you've dumped it, as you say, because you have to offload it? And I'm guessing that's the best way of doing it, isn't it? You get rid of it. I would imagine in the time that you've been doing it, you've gone through that and come out the other side yourself.
Yes. Yes. I mean, when you hear someone, and I don't mean this to sound heavy, but there are times, fortunately not that often these days, but I remember when I was first a Samaritan, very often we would have someone who was in the act of ending their life, and we were the last voice they heard. Now, that's pretty heavy. So you need to be able to pass that on to someone else, to share it, for someone else to give you a perspective on it.
And that's how you deal with it. There is something in place, that there is a mechanism in place that will help. Because as I say, it's like you said, you use the term heavy. I mean, it can be massively rewarding, I'm guessing. Mm. There are some pitfalls, but there's help with that.
Yes.
So if you're still out there thinking, shall I, shan't I, try it. Give it a go. Yeah. And there will be, you will get the help and support that you need. And one can only imagine what that will make you feel like when you speak to people and you talk them down, or you help them, or you point them in the right direction. Mm. That's quite a feeling, I would imagine.
It's immense satisfaction for you personally that you've been privileged for this person to share things that they probably wouldn't share with anyone else. You know, it's the advantage that we're complete strangers to them. They don't see our faces. They only hear our voices. And that, to a degree, gives the caller the confidence to unburden themselves because they're never going to meet us.
Now, forgive me. I know that you've had a life. Yes. You know, you've been around a few years. When you look at, and you mentioned you were a programmer in IT, which is fascinating anyway. When you look back on your life, and I've only met you today, and I don't know too much about, is this what we're talking about now, one of the best things you've ever done in your life?
I have to be careful because I've got a wife.
Had a wife. she just messaged to say your bags are waiting by the front door.
I've lied to her about this. Yes, I think where I sit right now, you know, my working life is over. I've got less in front of me than I've got behind me in terms of life. And yes, for me to look at the Samaritans, you know, we have a branch meeting or whatever, and I'm standing, looking at them, talking to them, I'm thinking, do you know, this is pretty good.
Good for you. I mean, it's lovely to spend some time with you.
Thank you.
There's lots of people like you up and down the country that are doing wonderful things. And, you know, there are even more people that need people like you.
Oh,
so
yes.
The message is simple. Help out. Sign up. Get involved.
Please do. And the email address, director@iow-samaritans.org. Email me. I don't buy it.
Okay, look, I'm going to promise to get the red carpet out next time you're in. All right.
I'm invited back.
thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you.
Okay, pleasure.